gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie as she is away on vacation, and as are the Mooks. Chris and Jim are both in there. I think they just scattered dull corners of the earth. I think Jim, I'm fairly sure, is meditating on top of one of the pyramids. I think he gets a special permit once a year to do that. And, of course, Chris is, of course, doing his... I think he takes a week off every year to do boot camp, where he's, you know, helping people lose weight and get in better shape. And then, of course, Stephanie Miller is, I don't know where she is, but I'm sure that hot oil and palm leaves are involved. And I hope that's the case. For me, personally, I hope that's how it works. There's a lot to get to today. The U.S. has suspended its military ties with Honduras and has called for a very distinct line with them. We had a U.S. soldier captured in Afghanistan. The serviceman has been missing for 3 days, and the militants there are considering a prisoner swap, which I doubt will play out the way that they want it, especially considering, and we'll talk a lot about this hour, the U.S. Marines have launched a major operation in Afghanistan. It is seen as Obama's first major military operation, and it is the largest Marine offensive since Vietnam. There's a ton going on there. Of course, we'll also talk about the healthcare bill that has just come out. It's sort of an outline of what the new plan will be, but it's called the HELP bill, which I think is a lovely little moniker for them to add to HELP. It covers 97% of Americans, and it costs $600 billion, which is a good 400 short of what the CBO estimate of the early version of the bill was that didn't include the public option. This is what's very strange to me, if you listen to the other side, that it's the public option element of things that is really going to cost the most money. And then when they added it, the CBO estimated that it dropped the cost of the whole program $400 billion. Later on in the hour, we will have U.S. Congressman Adam Smith, a very smart man, a very capable politician, and a great congressman. And perhaps he can explain to me how something that was supposed to bankrupt the country is actually going to save us money in the end. It might have something to do with the fact that the AMA, Walmart, and a good deal of small businesses have about faced once they've seen the plan and recognized the need for a national healthcare situation. That being said, of course, Al Franken, the new senator from Minneapolis, from Minnesota, and he is driving the wing nuts crazy, which is going to be the most fun. I think really what I'm looking for is when he has some actual quotes. I cannot wait until we have the ability to run things that Al Franken has said from the Senate floor. Ugh. He gave a great speech reclaiming Paul Wellstone's seat, which was a really beautiful speech. And then, like I said, I can't wait for his first speech from the floor. It's going to be very exciting. And when they cover it, Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends will probably explode. I'm going to say it right here. Also, we'll have a little bit later on the hour. Apparently, Rush Limbaugh says that Michael Jackson flourished under Ronald Reagan and died under President Obama. And this is the clear difference between these two politicians. This is Rush Limbaugh's explanation of the difference between Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama and the policies. It was under the policies of Ronald Reagan, Michael Jackson did extremely well. And under the policies of Barack Obama, he died. Which makes... how much sense?
Boy, what in the hell's the matter with you?
I personally, we got it here. We'll deal with this later on. But the most important thing, Honor Bill, the U.S. Marines have launched a major operation in Afghanistan. We're looking at the order of 68,000 troops in Afghanistan by the year's end. 8,500 troops have been sent in the last 2 months. It's the largest massive buildup of forces. Originally, this year, we had 32,000 troops in Afghanistan. We'll see 68,000, more than doubling by the end of the year. This is the most interesting thing to me about this whole story, though. if you look at the difference, it's not just a numeric difference. A lot of people are saying that this, you know, qualifies as sort of a generalized push, and that the difference between, you know, the Obama strategy and the Bush strategy is no different. It's just that Obama is putting more troops in there and hoping it will all go away. This is not the case at all. And if you look at all the reporting that's being done, from the Post to McClatchy to the AP, and to the British newspapers, you're seeing angles on this that really tell a difference in strategy, in tactics. And this is the most important. The operation, in the Washington Post is reporting, that once the Marine units arrive in their designated towns and villages, they have been instructed to build and live in small outposts among the local population. The brigade's commander, Brigadier General Lawrence D. Nicholson, said his Marines will focus their efforts on protecting civilians from the Taliban and on restoring Afghan governmental services, instead of a series of hunt-and-kill missions against the insurgents. This is a huge difference. Instead of just kind of stampeding past the villages, hoping nothing goes wrong behind them while they're doing these missions into the mountains, the whole point will be to protect the villages and the cities so that a natural government can start to grow again, because that's been the problem. It's been chipped away from the inside. And McClatchy News Service is reporting, and this is my favorite part of the whole thing, on a couple of fronts. James L. Jones, the National Security Advisor to President Obama, said that he told commanders on the ground that the time for debate was over about this strategy, and that it's time to implement the new three-step plan with the troops already committed, plus a renewed emphasis on economic development and the rule of law. They are really talking about creating an infrastructure, which is the real thing that was devastated in Afghanistan with having to drive out the Taliban. Now, here's the great part. This is the part that is really, I think, the essential difference and a difference in policy and in a difference in attitude towards human life that Obama versus Bush. Army General Stanley McChrystal, the top commander in Afghanistan, will issue the directive as a part of an effort to cut down on civilian casualties, which have enraged the Afghan government and residents. Instead of calling in air support or firing onto civilian homes where Taliban fighters have sought refuge, commanders will be instructed to reach out to the tribal elders or undertake other efforts to dislodge the fighters. They have been given orders specifically to fall back if they think civilians are at risk during an operation. This is a clear and distinct difference between the attitude and the push of the Bush administration and the Obama administration. And I think will be more almost than the efforts itself, it will be the most effective part of this strategy is the fact that he's really focusing on limiting the civilian deaths. Because every time we do this and civilians die, it costs us far more than it gains us. And we will talk a little bit more about that as we go on through the hour. And I also, since we have Adam Smith coming up, I'm going to talk to him a little bit about cap and trade, which passed in the House. It's not really the cap and trade bill. It's a climate bill on a lot of different fronts, but it's being painted as a cap and trade bill because it sounds negative. I think they're trying to attach the word trade because people are so afraid of the stock market, and the word cap, which sounds like limiting, as if that's a bad thing, as if limiting greenhouse gases, the ability to pump greenhouse gases into the air, limiting them to a certain amount is somehow bad and anti-freedom. This is the amazing part. The right is now pushing cap and trade as an attack on freedom. We actually have a clip of Glenn Beck where he's actually saying this, where he's they're going after cap and trade as if it's an attack on freedom of speech. It's the very first clip we have today, and it's first of all, it's showing the duality of him, because he actually says that people are referring to the people who are for cap and trade as cap and traders, and I think that's going too far. And then the second part of the clip, it goes to 24 hours beforehand, where he actually says basically the same thing. He's running the names of the Republicans who voted across it and saying they're no different than Democrats. And there's a graphic that they had on the show that says cap and traitors and has their pictures up as if they're on a wanted poster. Let's hear it.
I will tell you that, we talked about this on the radio program earlier today, that a lot of people are calling this. In fact, I read it, where was it, in the Washington Examiner today, that the people are saying that cap and trade is cap and trader. They're actually, people are starting to view people, both Republican, Democrat, as traitors to the country, which I think is over the top. That's a very specific definition.
Now here's the second part where he picks it up, where he says he's running in the lower scroll. He's running this you know GOP members' names across the bottom as traitors, and then there's a wanted poster on the wall behind him in his graphic.
These are the people, by the way, at the bottom. These are all the Republicans that voted for this thing. I mean, if you have, really, Kevin, if you have a Republican that is voting for this kind of government, what is the point? I mean, people will say, oh, well, the other guy is worse. Really? You voted for cap and trade. How could they possibly be worse?
Now, it's interesting to know, you know, a lot of people thought of over the last few years that the Republicans were this powerful monolith that you could not break through. But apparently they're having the same issue that we're having with some of the blue dog Democrats in getting some of our issues through, except they're just doing it. They're out of power and they're just trying to purge anyone who that doesn't agree with them. We're trying to kind of unify. It's a slightly different thing, but it's nice to know that they're not as impenetrable as you might think. So this is the cool thing. This is what excites me a lot. You know, of course, the first thing we heard when the bills for healthcare went to committee was that it's going to cost it. You know, it leaked out. The CBO did a report on an unfinished bill, and the price tag would not only be $100 billion, or I'm sorry, $1 trillion, but it would also leave 40% of people uninsured, and it wouldn't cover 37 million people who didn't have it, and that apparently it would give swine flu to anyone who read it. I don't know quite. It was just hysterical. And it was unfinished. The whole point was the CBO did an outline on the cost of what the bill would be. Now, the cost of the original bill did not include a public health option. It did not include a government-run insurance program to compete with public care. Okay, it did not include that, and the price tag was $1 trillion. Now, Democrats on a key Senate committee have outlined a revised and far less costly health care plan Wednesday night that includes a government-run insurance option and an annual fee on employers who do not offer coverage for their workers. Okay, so if you don't cover your workers with your own version of health care, you pay a little bit per worker to the government every year for each of your workers. Now, it only covers, by the way, this is only companies that have more than 25 employees. So you have less than 25 employees, which is the majority of the corporations in this country. Small businesses, most small businesses don't have more than 25. The price tag, the 10-year price tag of it is slightly over $600 billion. It covers 97% of all Americans. And this is interesting. The Democrats who actually wrote it out made a very direct statement on it, and they said, we must not settle for legislation that merely gestures at reform. We must deliver on the promise of true change, which I think relates to what Obama wants. Now, here's what the revised proposal calls for. $750 annual fee for employers for each full-time worker not covered, and $375 for every part-time worker not covered. And this is companies with less over 25 employees. Anybody with less than 25 employees, you'd be exempt from this. The fee's forecasted to pull in $52 billion over 10 years, and with it's fascinating. The big worry is that because it has a government option, because of that word alone, it will fail to get bipartisan support. Ooh. Not going to have bipartisan support. And by bipartisan support, I mean 100% of Democrats and 100% of independents, because I don't even count the Republicans. They're not interested in anything anyways. All they want are amendments, and then they're going to vote against it anyways. They're just chipping away at stuff. And so right now it's the Democrats who have about 95% of the Democrats are in line with this, and the independents, which are split 50-50. You've got Sanders and you've got Lieberman, technically, as your independents, and they're split right down the middle. And we will listen, after we come back from the break, we're going to listen to a little bit of Joe Lieberman's excuse for why he doesn't think it's necessary, and nature shows him why it is. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is not normal.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie and the Mooks while they're away on vacation, and I'm hoping they're having a wonderful time. I genuinely hope that they are actually vacationing and not listening nervously to the show, hoping I don't screw up and ruin their whole baby that they've got here. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, stephaniemiller.com for the podcast. And before we get to the Lieberman clips, there are a couple of other things I want to mention out loud, one to scare you and one to perhaps lighten load. North Korea is test firing two missiles. I hope into each other. That would be my goal. Like they're trying to do a big, you know, missile high five in the air. They just smack two missiles together and go, see, we can target them at each other. Great. And go back to sleep. And then, of course, India has now made it legal for gay people to have sex. Yes, it was illegal in India to have gay sex. Now, I'm assuming what they mean by gay sex is sex between two people of the same sex, and not just really, really happy sex. Because, I mean, if you've read the Kama Sutra and you know anything about giggling and laughing meditation, clearly those meet someplace. And, you know, I would hate to just say, like, it would just sadden me if the people of India had all this time been having very morose sex, considering how much they know about it. I've read very thoroughly. I mean, who hasn't bought the Honey Dust and Feather combo pack for somebody's birthday along the way with those little Kama Sutra things? I'm going to take one call real quick. John in Dallas, Texas, is a doc, and he thinks I'm wrong about healthcare.
Yeah, just a little bit, buddy. So let me ask you a question before I go too far. Do you think there ought to be any profit in healthcare?
No, not particularly. However, I don't think that people should not be allowed to profit from healthcare. I just think that shouldn't be the main reason you get into it. It's healthcare. You know what I mean?
All right.
It's like, do you think there? Wait, how about this? Do you think there should be profit with cops and firemen?
Maybe, depending.
Really?
On what we
you
want
think
them
that?
To accomplish.
Okay, so you gotta. You think that a cop. Who do you think a cop who kills a person who's unarmed should get a raise, or a cop who injures himself stopping a person who is unarmed should get a raise? You know what I'm saying? You're talking policy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear your comment, but I think what we want is perhaps different, and your premise.
I'm certain
is
that's true.
What I'm aiming at.
We got just a minute, so go ahead.
If I were to say I want an investigation done and I want to hire a private detective, I think I'm going to be a little bit more likely to accomplish my goal than I would be if I had a detective. But let's just put that to
Well,
side.
I don't know. I would watch I don't know how many shows about cold case files there are done with private people, but I know that police stations actually have active detectives running all the time. And if you only had the option, how about this? How about you only had the option of a private detective and you did not have the cops helping them? I appreciate what you're trying to say, but I also think it, and we got to go to a break, but I also think it is absurd. I think we need the option. If it's the option that scares you, then why is the lack of the option not scaring you? It's amazing. We're going to listen to what Joe Lieberman thinks about this while he apparently comes down with tuberculosis right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller on The Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be right back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Right before the break, I was telling you that we, in dealing with the healthcare issue, we're going to hear a little bit from independent, and I say that in air quotes, but you can't see that because this is the radio, independent member of the Senate, Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman. As you will hear in the clip in a little bit. But first, before we do that, I'm lucky enough to have on the line U.S. Congressman Adam Smith. Congressperson, are you there?
Yes.
Fantastic. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm terrific. There's obviously a lot going on in the world, and perhaps you can help me straighten out some of it. The two areas that I would, if you could, is, first of all, the climate bill, which passed through the Congress, and the big fear is that it will be hung up in the Senate Why do you think that is, and in particular? I mean, I have my own theories. But
well, the Senate, that's our fear whenever we pass anything in the House, because the Senate is just it's a more complicated body. I mean, they've got a more difficult process just to get anything through. I mean, one member of the Senate can hold anything up for a certain period of time. They've got an endless amendment process. They've got the cloture vote problem, whereas in the House, you know, we can pass a structured rule, and we at least can vote on something and get it through. The Senate is always a more cumbersome body, and we're worried about that. And, you know, and the second thing is, you know, various senators, the Senate has not staked out a particularly clear position at this point in terms of the leadership of the key committees over there and what they want to do on climate change. I mean, Henry Waxman, I think, you know, really took a leadership role in this. Not only did he come up with an idea himself, but he went out and he worked with all the different, you know, members of our caucus and people who are interested in voting for this and change bill. He worked the process. I've not seen as much work on this in the Senate.
Yeah, that's well. I think there's because you've got the two representatives from each state. There's a very distinct. I think a broader connection, and it costs a lot more to get elected to the Senate than it does to the Congress, not, you know, these days. There's a lot more moneyed interest in the Senate as well. And especially when you get to things where you're really picking the pockets, that, you know, or at least it feels like to them, of bigger organizations, be it coal, be it the oil and gas industry, be it, you know, what it used to be, the AMA and the, you know, and companies like Walmart, but now they've actually turned around a little bit on healthcare. So that's actually looking a little more positive, but yeah, that seems also is the moneyed vested interest up there as well.
Well, you know, I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, to each one's own. It seems to me like, I mean, there's other kind of campaign contributions in the House, campaign contributions in the Senate. I don't know that it's a particularly bigger problem in the Senate.
Okay.
And also on both health care and on energy, as you said, I mean, this time it seems like there's been a big focus on policy and on the climate change bill. I mean, we've had some industry folks who have come around to saying it's, you know, it's okay. So I think, I don't know if that's the case or not.
Well, what I mean is not so much sort of from a bribery angle, but from the fact that as a congressperson, you represent a specific district and the needs of that specific district. But as a senator, you represent the whole state. And if you're from a state where the majority of it comes from, you know, coal or gas or whatever, then that's more of your focus than, say, the congressperson of somebody across the state who that has nothing to do with their district.
Yeah, that is absolutely true, and that will certainly be a challenge. But I still am optimistic that we can get something out of the Senate and get something done, because I think, I mean, this is just straight common sense.
Right.
And I had a whole bunch of constituents calling me last week. The Republicans and others were out in force saying how bad this bill was. And the main complaint was, oh, you know, this is going to drive up energy costs. And what I said is, you know, what, have you been paying attention lately?
Right.
Gas tripled in the state of Washington a summer ago.
Right.
Current energy policy is driving up energy costs for my constituents. We have to change the policy so we're not at the mercy of oil.
Well, exactly. If and this is, you know, this is a sort of a drastic analogy, but let's say we were running out of sunlight, and that's how we had run. We'd been solar forever. And for whatever reason, the atmosphere was changing where the sun never passed through enough to power things, and we had to switch from solar to gas. And the other switch, that time period from transitioning from one to the other would cost a lot of money. But over time, it would save us and make us able to continue to be an active society and a connective society. So this natural, we are running out of oil. We have basically, you know, there's arguments about when it's happened, but peak oil in the last 5 years, it's argued that we've hit peak oil, that it's all downhill from here. We have to find an alternative.
Yeah, and whether we're running out of oil or not,
it's bad for the environment and health, right?
Yeah, what is absolutely happening is demand is going through the ceiling because China, India, Brazil, all these other economies are consuming more and more. Oil, coal, there simply isn't enough of it to feed the growing energy demands. And the other thing about this bill is it's not just a matter of finding alternative sources of energy. It's about finally getting smart about being efficient in how we use energy, regardless of where it comes from. We could waste a hell of a lot less of it than we do right now and be better off, and this bill pushes that as well.
Oh, no question. I mean, if you look at the technology involved in using a gasoline combustion engine compared to every other form of technology since 1982, it's the biggest lag that we've ever seen. There's been so little effort to raise the level of that technology. If computers were, if the growth of a computer's usage was the same as, you know, how we've done a gasoline engine, we'd all be on a 2400 baud modem right now trying to watch a third of a picture, you know, every 10 seconds, you know, grind down our screen.
That's an excellent comparison.
Yeah, the internet would be an infuriating mess that would serve no one. If we were comfortable with that level of growth in our technology, and we're not, and I don't understand. Like, I think personally that the auto industries, and I would be curious also to think your thoughts on this, but I think the auto industry took a lot of their profits and a lot of their money, and they spent it on stopping their own innovation, arguing against it, and in the case of California, spending a lot of it litigating against it, and making sure that they don't have to improve their engines and their abilities. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think what happened with the auto industry is, you know, they had a model that for a lot of years made them a lot of money. And mm-hmm. their determination was, you know what, let's go ahead and do everything we can to hang on to this model, even long after, you know, everyone could see that it simply wasn't going to last. And
right.
This happens in industry all the time. It's like the story of, you know, when Microsoft and Apple grew up with the personal computer, you know, IBM was doing just fine. You know, the famous quote, you know, why would any individual person want a computer?
Right.
Because, you know, IBM was, you know, making a ton of money doing it the way they did it. They didn't want to see it change.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the auto industry, and I also would say in the case of energy, you know, the infrastructure, particularly on the oil, natural gas industry, the infrastructure to make it go made it difficult for a Microsoft to emerge.
Right.
The barriers to entry were so overwhelming that those industries were able to sort of block the innovation and sort of strangle the industry themselves without any innovator being able to come along and compete with them.
Right.
Hopefully this bill will help change that.
Absolutely. I mean, and then, of course, that leads us, you know, naturally towards public transportation, railways, and our own airways.
Right.
This is something that, you know, during the Bush administration, I think they really actively pushed to destroy, essentially, because they just weren't interested in it. Somehow,
right.
They believe that there's more money to be spent in vehicles than in trains and any other form of transportation. And what is your feeling? I mean, I was in Taiwan in November. They have a bullet train that runs the entire length of the island. You can be there, you know, in 4 hours. You can be basically with the equivalent of San Francisco to Mexico City. You know, it's
right.
Amazing. And that's a country of 25 million people.
Yeah,
it's absurd that we're technologically behind like that. What's your feeling on that?
No, I think we have to make that transition, and it's all part of the same issue. And I mean, I think a thing to acknowledge is, you know, we fell in love with the automobile and cheap oil. And, you know, the whole issue, you know, the way I try to explain it is, you know, people say that we didn't have an energy policy in the 20th century. That's not actually true. We did have an energy policy. It was cheap oil.
Right.
And we were gonna run off of it. I mean, this is the stories going back to the 40s and 50s about the automobile companies buying up public transportation systems just to shut them down. And you know, I think the thing to acknowledge as, you know, someone, you know, I was born in 1965, sort of I grew up in the middle of this boom period.
Right.
It worked.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't criticize the cheap oil policy for what it did for our economy.
Because we weren't even aware of the limitation of it, really, in any
right.
practical sense, or the health costs.
But, you know, you look around and you see what's going on in terms of the environment, and you see what's going on in terms of the cost of energy, and you have to acknowledge that cheap oil as an energy policy is not sustainable. I mean, we should have known that in the mid-1970s, but we sure as hell should know it right
now.
Now,
absolutely. Adams, we're okay. Running out of time. We got to go to a break. I want to thank you so much. Obviously, we could talk about things forever and ever about these things, and I'd love to have you back sometime, and I'm sure Stephanie would as well.
That's what's so fun about my job. I got to say before you go, I'm a big fan of the I Love the 80s, I Love the 90s.
Right on.
I think you're one of the funniest guys on that show.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, and I will be up in your state doing stand-up up in Bellevue, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so please come down, and I will say nothing on stage that will get you in trouble for laughing at it during that particular show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam Smith, a U.S. congressman from Washington's 9th District. We're going to take a break. This is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Who are those freaks?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Loves the working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie and the Mooks while they're away. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, of course. This show today brought to you by the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. By the way, that's EQUINOX, just because, you know, sometimes they take real words and turn them into other cute words for car names. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. There you have it. I'm getting good at that part. We just had U.S. Congressman Adam Smith from Washington's 9th District. I will be at Parlor Live in Bellevue, Washington, July 16th through the 18th. Doing shows up there. I'm so excited. That's very close to Seattle. I've been waiting to play there for a long time. And hopefully Adam can come down, and then we'll put him in the cone of secrecy so that he can laugh freely at what I'm talking about without getting himself in trouble, because I'm held back a little on the air, let's just say, and I try to use a modicum of decorum that I do not feel the restraint of when I'm performing live in a comedy club. Just call it I don't know, the Randy Rhodes factor. We'll call it that. Again, our number is 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm going to get to these Lieberman clips, but I want to go to Tim in Madison, Wisconsin, real quick. Tim, you there?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm glad you're there. I'm very happy that you're there.
I'm glad you're around. You know, he said I like you in the 80s and 90s. I loved you in the new millennium.
Well, you know, it's important to make that distinction, even though it was, I like that you liked me on that, because it was only 8 of the 10 years. We haven't even finished the decade yet, and we did that
one. I know, but it was hilarious. I always enjoyed you. The only thing I don't like right now is you got that long, shaggy hair.
I don't right now, actually. I just cut it for the cancer charity, Locks of Love. It's if you follow me on Twitter, at Hal Sparks, aside from the fact that my picture is green in support of the Iranian protesters, you can see that I now have short hair. Also, if you go to halsparks.com, there's a splash page right now, and that's what I look like. So calm down.
Once I get off the phone,
I'll talk you off the edge. So you're calling about Rush and
Rush and all the other right wing bloggers right now bashing this woman who has cancer.
Right.
And I just, is there any more reason why we need universal health care? I mean, you look at some of the, my premiums jumped. You would not believe how much I was paying, like $700 every month, which was high enough. And I wanted to add my partner on there.
Sure.
When I wanted to add my partner, it jumped to $2,300 a month.
Of course. $2,300 a month?
$2,300 a month for health insurance. I had to look at him and say, I'm sorry, I can't put you on my health insurance.
Right.
There's just no way. I mean, I don't think a lot of people, I don't think the right wing is understanding this at all, that average Americans can't get health care. If you're where you work does not provide it, you can't get health care.
Well, I think there's a combination. I totally agree. I think there's a combination, and thanks a lot for the call, Tim.
Thank you.
I will try to do the next 20 years or whatever that we do on VH1 with as much
excitement.
Okay, cheers.
Have
thanks.
A good one.
Thanks. You know, there are several different factors in the way the right feels towards health care, and it's a perfect storm of the corporatists who believe that everything should be private and that the government should be run into the ground because they want to be able to rule basically as a capital version of a monarchy, basically, that the rich should just be able to rule because they are rich, even if it's just legacy money and handed down. They still deserve it because their grandfathers were smarter than your grandfathers. That's their kind of attitude. The other group is, of course, these people who've been sold a bill of goods that believe that they don't have the right to choose their own doctor under a government plan. Well, have you signed up for an HMO lately? Have you had to change insurance companies lately? The vast majority of them, I'd be shocked to hear that the majority of people are able to keep their doctor if they move or they have to change companies, because that's not how it is. Most doctors have to pick one of those programs to be under, and if you switch companies, you're no longer with them. The only way you can pick your doctor is go to the same emergency room over and over again in most parts of the country. And then the other factor is that there's a group of people who believe, and these are the super, super Christian types as well. This is ironic to me, that these are people who identify themselves largely as a Christian group, but also believe in culling the herd, that somehow you don't deserve to live if you're just too poor, you know, and you happen to get cancer. Sorry. I'm sorry. You don't have a, you know, obviously God wants you dead. It seems like, that seems like their real part of their belief. It's stunning. Now, here's, this is Joe Lieberman. I want to play a little bit of what Joe Lieberman was saying. He was asked about, his, you know, how he felt about the public option. And this was his response.
I'm skeptical of it, both in substance and in the politics. And by the politics, I mean, I think we're not going to get the votes to pass the overall bill if that becomes a condition of it. Now, there's a lot of interesting options being talked about. One is to follow the model of Medicare Part B prescription drug, which sets up a standard of competition, and if that competition doesn't exist between insurance companies in a given marketplace, then a public option comes into play.
All right. Now, first of all, he calls BS on himself by coughing himself. It's like a kid in the back of a classroom that just happens to be living in your lungs, that when you say something that you know is a lie, suddenly, I mean, this happened to Cheney during that that press conference he gave, that speech he gave opposite Obama. He kept coughing during the parts that he knew were lies. It's like his own conscience was like living in a tiny section of his lung, and its only way of fighting was to produce mucus. So apparently Lieberman is choking on his own BS or whatever when he said there are a lot of interesting options. There are no interesting options unless you are unless you're Joe Lieberman. Let's hear the second clip. This is where he's asked if he's concerned that, you know, that insurance companies will not be able to compete with a public option. And Obama says that's exactly the point. It would drive down costs and force insurance companies to compete, especially in overhead. Let's see what he says about that. And then listen to the ending of, I think, the final response of what he gives in this.
That's not my primary concern. Part of my concern is that this goes to the deficit, the growing national debt. That inevitably, if we create a public option, the public is going to end up paying for it, and that's a cost we can't take on.
All right. So he's worried about the public option because the public will pay for it. Exactly. But we're not going to pay for it. Oh, my God. $600 billion over the next 10 years to cover 97% of Americans in the health bill, and that will really pick up the slack and will create a system where you cannot kick people off simply because they are sick. The insurance companies have cornered this bizarre market where they sell you a policy. Then when you get sick, they find every way possible to kick you off of it so they don't have to pay for it. And if you can't find another form of insurance because you're already sick. If they're using pre-existing conditions as a reason for not giving people health care, and then they kick you off when you're sick, they know nobody is going to be there to pick up the slack, and you're just left with it. And there's person after person who's having to deal with this. This is stunning. Okay, so anyways, all through this thing, obviously, Joe Lieberman is sick. He has some form of chest cold. He is coughing through this whole thing. Now, he doesn't seem particularly concerned. He seems pretty relaxed. You know why? You know why Joe Lieberman is very relaxed during his coughing fit? Because he has public health care. That's right. He's a senator, and he is on a public health plan. He can relax. He doesn't have to worry about being kicked off. He doesn't have to worry about being denied coverage. He doesn't even have to worry about a pre-existing condition. He's a senator, so he gets public health care. He's your servant. Don't you think you deserve the same? I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller on The Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back.
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is a different thing. It's spontaneous, and it's called wit.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'll be getting to some of your calls in just a moment. We got a couple people in there that I would love to speak with. I have a special guest in studio that's coming up in just a moment. I'm just going to make you wait for a second. While I talk about healthcare, because I think this dovetails nicely into this. Again, I want to bring this up that when the right wing gets its panties in a bunch about healthcare, a lot of times they talk about the costs. People do not understand the cost. The cost. Okay. We have one more quote from Joe Lieberman. It's track five. Give me track five real quick.
I don't know. My fear is, and it's a fear shared by, healthcare providers, is that they would end up getting levels of reimbursement from the public plan. The public plan would be cheaper, but they'd get levels of reimbursement comparable to what they get today from Medicaid.
Again, has nothing to worry about because he has public health care. He's not worried at all. The cough doesn't seem to bother him. He's not... you could lean and go, Joe, I think you have tuberculosis brought on by years of bronchial problems and stuff. What is your insurance company going to kick you off if you try and go get treated? No, because he's a senator, and he has public health care. So, of course, he doesn't care if you get it. He's skeptical. He's critical. That's his key words. So here's the thing. The big push the right pushes is the cost. Oh, my God, the cost. The cost. Well, that classic quote is that a cynic knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing. And this is a group that has been selling the value of human life and the value of families through family values for a long time. It's how they get elected. It's their primary thing. And then when it comes to something like health care, which could not be clearer on how it benefits every single human being in this country, they seem to brush that aside quick and go, hey, who's going to be able to make money off this? How are companies going to make profit? How are doctors going to be able to afford more than four cars if they have to, treat poor people for, government wages? Really, that's their biggest concern. That really is their concern. How are we going to be able to afford all this stuff if the government is involved? How are we going to be able to afford all this great technology? Guess what? Every single piece of military technology comes from government subsidy. We pay for it. We pay for the design. We pay for the innovation. We pay for it getting handed out, and we pay to use it. So why is it that different? Why can we build a stealth bomber with government money in a government-run system and pay private contractors, which would be the doctors in this case, and we could build a stealth bomber, but we cannot hand out insurance payments like Medicare does to everybody in the country or like the Senate and the House gets to get? And the president gets and his staff gets. To me, this is an issue of this is a pro-life issue, and not in the vernacular usage of it, but the very specific. Not pro-life just as long as you're living, you're none of my business, but in the quality of life. And I have a guest on with me that I'm very excited about who obviously cares about the quality of life of every human being. The lovely, the talented Sherry Belafonte is in the studio with me today. Hello.
Hello. That's one hell of a segue.
Hey. Well, I mean it. I mean, I brought you in to discuss very specifically the Lily Claire Foundation, which I'll have you go into. But then, of course, Keith, I guess, Resnick is going to be dialing in with us in a little bit.
Active. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I don't know if he's awake yet.
Well, that's,
that's just so that because, it's so early for me. I thought, I can't even remember what we do.
Right.
Well, I could tell you exactly what we do.
Absolutely. Well, we should have recorded it.
Thank God for
yesterday.
Laptops, though, right? I sort of opened it up and I went, oh, my gosh, is that what we do?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I hear you. I've been getting up at 4 o'clock to do this all week because I'm filling in for Stephanie. And it's a new thing for my brain, considering I usually do stand-up way late at night.
Because isn't it probably the time you're about going to bed.
Oh, yeah. But, my mantra is sleep is the enemy anyway. So if I can sleep in two-hour spurts four times a day.
That's what Einstein did.
I know. He supposedly slept, and look at his hair. So I'm just saying.
And where is he today?
Yes, dead. And he wore the same clothes every single day because he was unable. He was so exhausted that all he could do was pick out.
I think he just had 12 of the same outfit.
Right.
I'm sure.
You ever see that picture of him with his tongue stuck out and looking all frazzled? That's what happens when you sleep in two-hour spurts.
That's what I look like every morning.
Really? All right.
Thank God I had the top down on the car as I was driving in so that my face would sort of.
Smooth out?
Is that big? The tongue would go back in my
mouth. I didn't know that worked.
Clean my eyeballs with my tongue on the end.
Yes. So, the Lily Claire Foundation deals specifically with children living with neurogenetic conditions.
Correct. Neurogenetic conditions are things like autism and Down syndrome, Williams syndrome, Fragile X. Depending on who you talk to, you'll see statistics, not easy to say at 7 in the morning.
No.
Statistics that anywhere from 1 in 95 boys. Is born with a neurogenetic birth condition or autism, 1 in 105. It's somewhere, I think a safe bet is 1 out of 120 kids is born nowadays with
it's an increasing problem, and there's been new evidence that it might be related to toxic chemicals. Everybody was for everything from vaccines to peanut butter have been covered, but there's also a lot of toxic chemicals in our environment, and in a lot of these situations we're looking at a perfect storm of where syndromes are created, where it's not one cause.
Not to mention, we probably had a lot more that just went undiagnosed in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Absolutely.
And
80s, we just put them in a home and forgot about them in a lot of cases, or just, beat them into quietude.
Or put them in an office, one or the other.
Right. That's true. There was a good deal of that. But enough about the baby boomers. I kid. And you've been involved in the foundation for quite some time?
I have been. My husband Sam and I were invited as guests at one of their events in Las Vegas about 8 or 9 years ago, and one of the celebrities that was supposed to be there hosting the event did not show up. So at the last minute they said, Sherry, would you mind going on? Here's the script. Can you go on? And I went, blah, 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 blah. Sam and I have a niece who's autistic, and oddly enough, even though she has not really benefited from Lily Claire, because they live on my brother-in-law and niece live on the East Coast, I do remember that Sam and I were probably the first ones that diagnosed her. In that when I was first meeting her, she was about 2 years old, and there was just something about Katie.
Right.
You know, she was doing certain things that Sam and I looked at each other and went, we don't have kids, so it was sort of easy to point fingers and go, what's wrong with that kid?
Right.
And about 6 months later, because we mentioned it, and of course the entire family turned on us. There's nothing wrong with Katie. Katie's fine. She's perfectly normal. She's perfectly fine. And about 3 or 4 months later, they called and said, you'll be happy to know she was diagnosed with autism. And you sort of balk, going, wait a second, I'm not happy about that. Even though I don't have kids.
I'm
pleased that you found this out so that you can start dealing with it.
Right.
But so many families are, I think, just afraid to find out.
Absolutely.
I have very good friends on the East Coast now that they have a grandson. And the grandmother says, I think there's something about Robert.
right.
And
I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me. And she, I don't talk a ton about this, but she's, she grew up with a neurological disorder. And she, luckily, she's lucky enough to live in Kentucky where no one can tell. I'm joking. Relax. But it's in all honesty, I dealt with that my whole life, and so she went through a lot of extra schooling and stuff, and because they handled it slightly different. But my mom's a nurse, so she had a very practical view of it, unlike a lot of other parents. She was able to just go, this is just how it is, so we're going to make it the best we can make it for her. And my sister actually taught me how to read when I was 3 years old, because she was in these advanced classes to try and teach her with her difficulties how to catch up.
And in many cases, a lot of the kids advance. They're advanced in certain things.
Exactly.
You always think of Rain Man, where can't tie his shoes, but man, he can count every single match that's in that matchbox.
Right, exactly. which, of course, led to the big controversy in the movie Tropic Thunder. In the discussion of that, not recognizing that the use of the word retarded in that situation, and this was a very, this is always about the line of humor and where it's okay, that I actually think that that Ben Stiller was making the point about the kind of actor he was playing, that those guys talk about it like that. So when he was playing this Tug Speedman character, you know, he's like, this guy would be a jerk. He would. This is how he would talk about it. And people went, Ben Stiller shouldn't talk like that. Well, Ben Stiller doesn't talk like that. Ben Stiller makes fun of people who talk like that. That's the whole point of the character, kids. It's you know, that's always the issue. So,
anyway, Keith and Leslie. Yes, I'll get back to it. Keith and Leslie started the foundation. Keith is a producer, film producer. Leslie, of course, is a casting director here. She's well known for casting the show Friends. When they had a little girl, Lily, she was diagnosed with Williams syndrome. Mm-hmm. And
I'm not familiar with Williams syndrome as a...
Oddly enough, Williams syndrome is one of those things. I don't want to say it's like autism because it's not, but there is that retardation. There's mm-hmm. that look. A lot of the kids have a propensity towards music. Mm-hmm. They are savants. They're music savants. She died from complications. I think she was about 9 months old when she died.
Right.
And they started the foundation because, you know, it was hard to find information about Williams syndrome.
Right.
And ultimately, we now service everybody for free. Yeah, unlike a lot of things about medicine right now.
Yeah.
All of Lily Claire's services are for free.
That's great.
We have a clinic in Las Vegas. We're with the UNLV in Las Vegas. We have a clinic here. We were with UCLA, but now we're going to have a mobile unit that will travel around Los Angeles to service the children here in L.A. And then we also are with Meharry College in Nashville University.
That's
Nashville,
great.
So.
That's terrific. Yeah, and this would be a natural part of our entire system where we'd have a nationalized health care mm-hmm. situation, because this would be follow under preventative care and maintenance care, which is the biggest, harshest part of the insurance world.
Right.
They want to have nothing to do with, in a lot of situations, with people who have chronic disorders that aren't going to improve or that can't be medicated away or into submission mm-hmm. for a time. And nothing is more frightening, I think, for people than when they have a child who has an issue like this that may or may not be permanent.
And I think they feel so alone.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. They sort of feel like this is... And, again, it's difficult for me to speak specifically because I don't have children, but I know that a lot of people have said to me, I just felt so alone.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what I was going through.
Yeah.
And having a family resource center here that they can come to, and, you know, they realize that, A, you're not alone, and, B, there are things you can do, and, C, we've got lots of services for you.
Yeah. Well, again, growing up with my sister and her condition, I had a bit of an accident when I was 5 years old that put me in a coma for a little period.
Wow.
And there was a period where my father thought he was going to lose me as well, that he had his daughter had these issues, and then his son, if he woke up, may or may not be like this.
Right.
And both his children would have these limitations on them. And it was a hard point in his life for him. And
Did your parents stay together?
Yeah. Oh. For that time. You know, they're not together now. But through that period, they really did hold out. And my mom always knew. She was a nurse, so she's very pragmatical. She's like, hey, he's going to be fine. She almost she would, like, come over and
thank
flip,
God, now I don't have to clean up his room.
Yeah, exactly. He stopped making a mess temporarily. We're going to take a break. Can you stick around for one more
sure.
little break? One little bit. I'm lucky enough to have Sherry Belafonte in the studio with me. This is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie on her vacation. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. Still with me here, luckily. Luckily, I get to keep you over for another segment. We only have a little time, but I just wanted to say, it's Sherry Belafonte, by the way, is here with me in studio. And we're talking about the Lily Claire Foundation and, of course the healthcare needs of children specifically, especially, as it were, quote-unquote, special needs children.
Mm-hmm.
I often hear one of my, I guess, pet peeves as a phrase is special interests. You hear that all the time in politics. We can't allow the special interests to control things. Okay. No, we can't allow the corporate interests to control things because, technically speaking, nurses, teachers, and advocates like people who are involved in the Lily Claire Foundation qualify as special interests. Oh, I just had a great idea. yeah, you know, I can always tell when I think something's smart because the bell goes off. You know what I mean? Like there is an importance of this level of advocacy. You know, the government works for us. I always come from that point of view. And Lily Claire Foundation and the people who are involved with it and also the people who need the services of it, I think have a special interest, as it were, in the healthcare debate, you know, and the needs of children are very important. So, first of all, let's get to do the business of Lily Claire, too. I want people to be able to help out. So, Lily Claire has a website, I'm assuming.
LiliClaire foundation.org.
Claire with an E. Yes.
Lily Claire with an E.
Yes. You can Google it, and Google will often fix it for you, but
let's
go there.
Actually, I think if you did type in LILY, it would still come up. As long as you have LiliClaireFoundation.org, you'll find it.
Terrific. And they provide behavioral clinics, genetic clinics, music camps, autism clinics, school advocacy, emergency services.
Yeah. Training. And a lot of kids that are now, you go to Kmart, you go to the movie theaters, and we have some special interest kids that are working.
Right.
You know, years ago, like you said, we used to lock them up and didn't realize that
there was something extraordinary
in our lifestyle.
Absolutely.
In our society.
There was a tribal element, you know, centuries ago, where when people like this came into our tribes and into our groups and stuff, we recognized them as having a specific purpose, as a gift. Because
we're Native American.
Yes,
you and I saw that.
Exactly.
Maybe my husband's tribe too.
Yes,
he was Jewish.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, the tribal peoples all recognized very much so that
it's a gift.
Yeah, that there was something extraordinary. These people were not bothered by the normal, boring elements of being human, and they were just focused on
special. Meant special.
Yeah, it really did. So, anyways, I want to thank you for being in studio with us today.
Thank you.
And and for advocating for this. Again, it's the LiliClaire Foundation.org. If you have children who are dealing with these kind of issues, I can't tell you how helpful they are, and it's a great place to reach out to.
And the services are free.
Yes, the services are free. And if you don't, this is the other thing, too.
If you know somebody.
Yes.
So many people know somebody.
Absolutely. We have to take a break. Thank you so much.
Thank
Sherry
you.
Belafonte in studio with his former Playboy cover person. There, I said it. I feel better for having said it. You're on Playboy.
Thank you, Hal.
I've been so trying not to be awkward the whole time. Okay. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller while they're away on vacation. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I can assure you, I mean you no harm.
Tina Turner be right now if she'd rolled over and said, "Hit me again, Ike, and put some stank on it."
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number. StephanieMiller.com. We were lucky enough to have the lovely and talented Sherry Belafonte in with us. I really do urge you to go to the LiliClaireFoundation.org website and help out if you can. Get information if you need it. All the services they provide are free. I'm going to get on to more of my problem with Joe Lieberman's cough in just a moment. But I want to take Ginger in Texas. Hey, Ginger, you there?
I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm spectacular. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thank you. You are doing such a good job. I'm so proud of you. It's been really great to hear you every morning and get that little shot of brilliance.
Oh, thanks. Sweetie, as they say, you're probably right.
Yes, I know.
So you're calling about the the schizophrenia of the Christian right.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know how you were talking earlier about how health care is actually really right in line with Christianity.
Yeah.
And
the highest values of that, absolutely.
Well, Christ was a healer,
mm-hmm.
and he did it without profit. So, I mean, there's no real argument to make it a commercial commodity if you're running on a Christian base.
Right.
And the thing that scares me the most about these people is they are getting into battle mode. I saw yesterday where they are actually coming out with a Bible called the Patriot Bible.
The what?
And the what? Patriot, the American Patriots Bible.
Wow.
Now, doesn't that scare you? I mean, that is just red flag warnings everywhere. But it says here that they were talking about how we're in a low, you know, turbulent time in our history and everything. And instead of talking about, you know, war and the economy and whatnot, this is what they say. The Judeo-Christian principles are being beaten down. They are actually under attack, and this has never happened before.
This has never happened before? Right.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, when, you know, abortion was legalized and gay rights were starting to come. No, it was never attacked before that.
Right.
You know, according to their skewed little
version of quote-unquote facts. Right.
Exactly. And so, you know, you hear people like you were playing that clip yesterday of Mark Sanford saying he wanted to bring Christian values into government. And, you know, that would be great if they were bringing Christian values, but they're not. And it has nothing to do with the persona of Christ that was depicted in the Bible.
Right. Well, a lot of what they're doing is they're, you know, it's a sales pitch, you know,
and
that's why a lot of people think of politicians, quote unquote, as used car salesmen. The reason why used car salesman has always been used in the pejorative is because these guys sell any model the same way, that they don't really care what they're selling. They just sell it all the same, you know,
right.
And they don't care about the quality of what they're saying or whether it fits with the other stuff. They go, Chevy, oh, you're going to be lucky with that Chevy. That's the greatest car you ever had in your life. But, hey, take a look at this Fiat. I'm telling you, this Fiat is the look, if you want a car, then the BMW is the car for you, my friend. They're just following your eyesight to get you to buy because they want to make money off you.
Right. And they're just basically telling you what they think you want to hear while still having their own kind of agenda.
Right, like have their mistress and eat it too. I kind of understand.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it was like I was blogging yesterday. I don't really think they have any intention of getting rid of anything that they have these people vote for. You know, I don't think they're ever going to make abortion illegal because it's too good of a selling point every election. You know, they always have these people that come out, and that's the only reason they vote.
Well, it's also one of the reasons why they're having problems. And I got to let you go, Ginger, but I want to thank you. I think you're doing great work as well. There, I said it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Cheers. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, this has always been a sales, and quite frankly, I think it has a lot to do with their low rating because, quite frankly, you know, from my side of things, I've always disliked them based on policy and attitude and how separate their values are, their walk is from their talk. I've never liked them, but now a good portion of their own base is starting to not like them because they've been sold a bill of goods too. There are a lot of Christians, as there are a lot of Muslims and Jews and Wiccans and Scientologists, people of all religious stripes, they're a vast majority of them, and I believe this is true of all people, are good and really understand that climate change is an issue of health and caring for the planet and for ourselves. You know, if you don't believe that climate change is a problem and you think it's just an attack on business, then look at the 100,000 people who are sent to the hospital every year with asthma problems because of pollution. And explain to me why corporations can't figure out a way to make money off of cleaner technologies that don't send those 100,000 people. I don't think if your business sends 100,000 people to the hospital every year, you don't run a successful business. If I as a person sent 100,000 people to the hospital every year, then I would be arrested. If I did the kind of damage that a lot of these corporations do to people, I would be put in jail. But the right is defending their right to not have to clean up after themselves, to not make a cleaner push for things. It's crazy. Okay, so I'm going to go. However, I don't have to have everybody agree with me. We've got Leslie in Spokane, Washington. Leslie, how are you?
Hi.
Hi. So, I'm coming up to Bellevue to do stand-up. So even if you don't like me after this phone call, you should still come see my show. All right.
I think you're great.
Thanks. But you're not a fan of the Obama healthcare policy?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Well, he is putting it all back on the backs of the employer, and the myth that everyone gets their insurance from an employer is just that, a myth. We've got millions of people out there working the part-time job. All these employers do the part-time job formula. They hire strings of people on the part-time job formula, and the whole purpose is to avoid the package of giving them health care. They don't want to pay that health care package.
Obviously, Walmart had been, classically had been making people work at a wage below the poverty line on purpose and saying, if you do this, then you can get Medicaid.
Using the system to make their bottom line, and then they sit there, the rich people say, oh, where are we going to pay for it? Well, we're already paying for
exactly.
it this time.
I totally agree. Well, that's why, if you were listening earlier, the new help bill that's come out of committee, this is, the CBO came out and said $1 trillion and it doesn't, without a government health care policy, and the whole thing is going to be a failure. And then the real bill is starting to really take shape. And the help bill that's come out right now covers 97% of Americans. The cost is $600 billion, which is $400 billion less than they initially estimated it to be. There will be a $750 annual fee for employers for each full-time worker not covered through their job. So if you're full-time and your job doesn't offer you health insurance, they're going to have to pay $750 for you, and then that will pick up the slack. You'll be able to get government health care based on that. $750 a year per employee. Over 25 employees. So if you've got a small company, less of an effect on you. Now, this is what addresses, I think, what you brought up. The fee is now set at $375 for part-time workers. So if you're part-time and you're not provided health care, but you're only a part-time employee, they'll be responsible for $375 a year to pay for you, to subsidize you in a sort of single-payer sort of situation for you to get health care.
I'm too sick to work? What if I get sick?
Well, then you're in a whole other system. It's not all in the back.
You're in a whole other system, but to change over that system takes years. And you can be in a health care throws because you've lost your job, you have no job, you're too sick, you try to get on to Social Security, then you have to go through that whole thing where they
turn that's
you
what
in,
they're working to fix. I mean, you're talking about the system as it is. You're not talking about the system as they're trying to fix it. And,
yeah.
And I absolutely agree with you on that fact, that as the system as it stands is completely unsustainable and negative towards patients. Thank you for the call. We've got just another minute, but James, who's a big GOPer, from Madison, Wisconsin, thinks that on healthcare, my facts are not true. Are you there, James?
Yes. I've got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
One, the left wing wants to always talk about the 47 million uninsured people in this country.
Right, and that actually is an averaging. Obviously, the variable number gets bigger and slightly smaller.
Do you know how that number breaks down?
In what way? Do you mean age, or do you mean?
No, how it breaks down that, about a third of those people that they're lumping into that 47 million aren't even U.S. citizens.
Oh, I see.
Then you got a large portion of that, and about almost another third of that number is people like myself that can have health care and choose not to because I don't have the use for needing it, and I don't see no point in paying a health care bill when I can pay for my own health care.
Well, okay, so you don't have insurance right now?
I personally do not.
You do not have, and why not? And because you don't want to pay for it?
Because I can have it through my company, and I choose.
Why would you not? What if you found out you had prostate cancer tomorrow? Or what if you found out you had, a catastrophic illness that had nothing to do with your own lifestyle? I mean, do you have a family?
Yes, I do.
Well, this is really about them. You're going to be saddling them with debt. 60% of the bankruptcies in this country come from people who can't afford to pay their health care costs.
A lot of people in this country, sir, that choose not to do it because they either don't. I'm in the military, too. I have very good health. I get checked out by doctors for truck driving. I get checked out by doctors for the military.
Okay, so you have VA. You have VA health care. Then you have public health care.
Sir, I would not go to the VA healthcare system to save my life.
Yes, you would. I guarantee that's exactly where they would take you if you had to convalesce from a major operation or you had to convalesce from any kind of major disease.
The healthcare service of the VA system is probably the poorest healthcare service.
Yeah, thanks to George Bush. I got to go. I got to take a break, but I thank you for the call. That is the most absurd argument for not having healthcare because I don't want it. Look, if you have a family and you get cancer, you go bankrupt. even if you have insurance, you're going to, and what if you pass away and you're not, let's say you don't heal, and you pass away and you're not even able to, you've saddled your family with, you know, somewhere between $36,000 and $200,000 worth of debt because you didn't want to have insurance, because you didn't want to pay for it. Well, what if you didn't have to pay for it, and the government picked up the slack for you, and you were guaranteed health care, and you didn't even have to think about it, which I'm sure you're a big fan of, not thinking about it. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller on The Stephanie Miller Show, 1-800-STEPH-12. More ridiculous arguments for why we don't need to help men, women, and children in need in this country from the Christian right, right after this.
You commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
You can tell so much about a person from the way they live. Just looking around here, I can tell you're a genuinely dirty person.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm going to go to Jason in Albuquerque. New Mexico. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And you do not think that global warming is man-made?
No, I don't. I think that we are definitely experiencing global warming and climate change.
Uh-huh.
And I do believe that we contribute. However, this is what I would remind everybody. One is that every planet in our solar system is warming also. And two, I would remind everybody to just look up the carbon footprint of Mount St. Helens eruption and see what Mother Earth does as far as carbon emissions. And, you know, going back to my comment about reducing our own, I am totally 100% supportive of it. I'm just not supportive of it through fear tactics and through the same tactics that George Bush used to get us to go to war and to get us to spend basically trillions
of dollars. Do you think my bringing up the fact that that pollution actually sends people to the hospital on a fairly regular basis, is that a scare tactic? Or do you think that's just legitimate facts?
Actually, I think that is legitimate fact. As somebody who's asthmatic and
right.
has experienced this my whole life, when I get into a city that is heavily populated,
mm-hmm.
go figure, I have a harder time breathing than if I'm out in the country. So absolutely, you are 100%
okay.
correct.
So you and I are on the same boat insofar as moving away from the burning of fossil fuels and the consuming
sure.
of coal and moving towards solar, wind, renewable sources, perhaps micronuclear, which is going to be the big thing that people are going to be talking about in the next 10 years, I think, is small mini nuclear reactors that don't put off the kind of waste that you can weaponize, which will, you know, believe me, read Popular Mechanics if you really want to be bored and crazy. But here's the thing. You and I both agree on the need for the elimination of fossil fuels because it's poisonous.
Tesla told us that 100 years ago. He said, Tesla, you know,
right.
really smart guy. He said, why are we using fossil fuels?
Tesla was even saying, why are we using wires? Tesla had come up with wireless energy, and MIT's been pushing for that for quite a while. And I really personally, and I look for again, Jason, you and I share this on this. I just don't think that the scare tactics about global warming are as big a problem as the problem itself. As in, you know, because some people, if that's what it takes to scare people into understanding that we need electric cars and the like, and solar panels and the like, then that's part of the message. Now, no one can argue if we're 20% of the problem, then that's too much. If that makes sense, if we can be 5% of the solution, then that's worth it. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally understand your math, and I do agree that we can be part of the solution, but I would just also remind everybody that planet Earth and Mother Nature are so much more capable of creating carbon and emitting it.
I agree, but it also doesn't happen with the regularity that we create it. You know what I mean? It comes with volcanic eruptions. It's not like they happen every 6 weeks. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Mother Nature's not a daily polluter.
No, exactly. We are, and that's something we can fix. I appreciate the call, Jason. I think you make an excellent point, and I do believe that we shouldn't necessarily use fear tactics for that. But I, you know, personally, I personally believe that climate change is happening and is largely our responsibility. I mean, you can track it fairly cleanly to our industrial revolution and our use of fossil fuels. Now, even if it's not, our use of fossil fuels is still killing us. It is poisoning our groundwater. It is poisoning our air. It is killing our citizens. It is making people sick. It is giving people long-term illnesses that cost us a lot of money. Those are reasons enough for us to start acting in every way that Al Gore suggests. Even if you hate him and you think that somehow he's using this scare tactic, when Al Gore uses climate change as a scare tactic to get you to start buying more fuel-efficient cars or arguing that there should be more fuel-efficient cars or that we should have better electrical uses in our country, if you want to compare that to Dick Cheney using the fear tactics that don't allow us to have a sensible Middle Eastern policy or deal with other countries like they're adults, that scare tactic isn't worse, that scare tactic actually qualifies as terrorism. It is actually, the whole point is to scare you into acting against your own best interests. When you talk about the argument over climate change, this is a scientific discussion that the majority of scientists agree that we are largely responsible for climate change. The majority, period. The majority believe this. Even if the fringe are right, the majority agree this. This is an argument that's going on. But the ultimate result, whether you come down on either side, is that nobody who wants to live wants to be anywhere near the tailpipe of a running car. This is our problem. And when you have a hydrogen car, it produces water. And when you have an electrical car, there is no need for an exhaust pipe. This is what I'm talking about. We get lost and bogged down. The right especially, for some reason, they have this hateful idea that because we want to help the environment, that somehow we want to limit other people's freedoms or that businesses are going to be hurt by the fact that they're not allowed to poison us. It is the most bizarre, ridiculous idea. How can you constantly make that argument? Now, Albert is calling from Fort Myers. I think he's calling in response to our trucker in Wisconsin. Are you calling about that one? Albert, are you there?
No, I'm calling about the guy who called about, who claimed that he was military and he doesn't have any insurance.
Right, he doesn't have any insurance and he doesn't want insurance, he don't need insurance, but he does have it through his job and the fact that he was in the military. So he has it. He has it in his job, and he has public health care.
And there were so many holes in that.
Totally.
I'm retired military, and my insurance per year is only like $460 for the entire family. I feel bad having that kind of insurance, but, it's a part of doing 20 years in the military.
Well, you shouldn't feel bad because you earned it. You know,
right.
You put a service into this country, and we're all grateful for you, and that's part of what we do as our gratitude. For that, and I wish it was better, quite frankly. I wish that we all had the system that you have now as a base to work from,
right,
and that you had better. And that's the way I think,
right.
At the very least, every family should at least, for that minimum amount. Would $500 in taxes a year be worth
right.
it for you to have full insurance?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not only me, but if it's on time. I don't mind. If I can do it, I will do it.
Right.
Because we all are entitled to these privileges of being an American.
Absolutely. I appreciate your call. I really do. Thank you, Albert. We're going to take a break. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in while Stephanie is on vacation. Our number is 1-800-STEP-12. If you agree with me, if you disagree with me, I'd love to hear from you on all those points because I know I'm right, actually. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa. diving. Ooh, Chetos. But it's the wise man that isn't.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We'll be taking your calls in a little bit, but I also have another special guest in with us, and I'm going to get to her in just a second. There's a little bit of anticipation. That's right. It's a very sexy morning here at the Stephanie Miller Show. I have to say, I'm very lucky in this. It's just been a parade of beautiful women. Sherry Belafonte in the last hour, of course, in with us to talk about the Lily Claire Foundation, lilyclairefoundation.org, which helps children that are born with either genetic disorders or just childhood onset disorders. They provide free services. It's fantastic. It's a great organization, and I urge you to get involved if you can, and use their services if you need them. That being said, just before we went to the break, I was talking about how the fact that even if you do not believe in global warming, you should still be against pollution. And this seems to be the weirdest mix-up in the whole argument that the right pushes forward. They get so angry. But global climate change is a lie. Al Gore is lying to us. He's a big liar. Okay, what happens if Al Gore's lie turns out to be true, or it turns out to be a lie, and you bust him on it? And what have we done? We have changed our cars to where we're electric, and we no longer have brown air around our major cities. This is a bad thing? And the vitriol of the complaint is just stunning. Meanwhile, let's go back to the Bush lies. Let's go back to the Cheney lies and see what happened when those lies turned out to be fake. And what happened that's stunning. So, and the same thing goes with healthcare. Providing a public healthcare system, you're like, hey, I don't want the government to run healthcare because, I don't want to be run like the DMV. Okay. It's a bad analogy for one. But secondly, even if it is, the DMV now is not the DMV of the 1960s. You can make appointments. You can do all kinds of things. And secondly, do you want unlicensed drivers out on the road? How you feel about that? How about that? Let's eliminate the DMV, too, while you're at it, because you hate government so much. And let's just have anybody who can afford a car or find a car get out on the road and start kicking it up and down the curb. What do we say? How about that? Because if government screws up everything, we can't have them involved in licensing that. How about no licensing of firearms, and no cops either, by the way. If you want to solve any crime, you have to hire your own private detective. And if you cannot afford a private detective, then, sorry, you're SOL. Oh, and your own private jail as well. If you do manage to capture someone, you're going to have to build a jail in your home, and they will keep the criminal, the person you think is guilty, for the length of their sentence. Now, you can, if you do want the death penalty, you will have to carry it out yourself. But if you don't believe in the death penalty, they can just live in your house, and you can assign, you can let them out for good behavior if they'll clean in your kitchen. This is insanity. Like, the level of hate for the government has lost its mind, and it's so, off the deep end. Now, there's a couple of issues, both social and political and pop culture, that are kind of fusing together in a couple of areas. And so, honest to God, I had to bring in someone that I thought was a brilliant comedic mind, as well as a socially conscious mind, someone that would help us sift through some of this stuff. And I'm lucky enough to have with me the lovely, the talented Carol Leifer in studio. Hello.
Good morning, Hal.
Hello.
Hello. I have my morning voice on.
It's very sexy.
You like it?
I do. I prefer it. It's lovely. mine's more piercing and stuff because I get very angry. Mine gets higher. My friend Chris, his impersonation of me is, I'm Hal Sparks and I'm mad. That's what I sound like.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty dead on. Of course, mm-hmm. I just did it, so of course it sounds like me.
Right.
Wow, you do you. So it's spooky. So before I even get to you're doing an evening with author and comedian Carol Leifer.
At the Renberg Theater.
At the Renberg Theater, Saturday, July 11th at 8 p.m.
In Hollywood.
You can go to lagaycenter.org/boxoffice for tickets or call 323-860-7300. That's 323-860-7300.
Now, here's the great thing about my show on July 11th at the Renberg Theater.
You will be there.
Number one,
yes.
I'll be there.
Yes.
Oh, I'll be there,
which
buddy.
Which is a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Now, with your ticket, $20.
Yeah.
You get a free autographed copy of my best-selling book, When You Lie About Your Age, The Terrorist Win.
See, I think that's brilliant.
Can you beat that?
It worked for Prince. You know?
It did.
Prince,
right?
Had the biggest record sales on his last album that he had in decades. You know why?
Why?
Because it came with your ticket price.
I love it.
You come
it.
To see him live.
I modeled my career after Prince.
Prince.
Yes.
And I think your outfit today really points that out as amazing. I've always looked for that purple coat with the big epaulettes, and I could never find it.
You see? It's never too early for a purple coat.
No, it's not.
Mm-mm.
She's not actually wearing a purple coat, folks. This is the theater of the mind. I'm gonna. We'll take some calls together in a little bit, but I do want to discuss something with you. Since you're apparently having your event at some sort of gay center.
Yes.
I don't know what that's about. But I was like, I was on this show, Queer as Folk, so I'm kind of gay adjacent, as
yes,
it were.
Yes.
I'm a straight person. But
everybody think you were gay being on that show?
Yes, everyone except my co-stars. They were very aware. They did in the beginning, and you know where I think that comes from? Now, and I still get asked the question. People always go, why are you always defending? Why do you always have to bring up that you're straight, bro?
Yeah.
Why are you like, gay people sound like that. Like, there's that dude. I've just played, that was the weirdest gay.
I have not heard one gay guy that sounds like that.
The weirdest gay stereotype in the world.
Honest.
Although there are, you know, the homophobic ones out there who are like, hey, I'm not gay.
Yeah.
And who are gay, who sound like that. But anyways, they would come out and go, why do you have to defend yourself all the time? And I'm like, I'm not defending myself. I'm being honest, A, about who I am. And
mm-hmm.
B, everybody keeps asking. No matter how many times I tell them I'm straight, they keep asking. And I realize what they were asking was,
right?
Are you gay yet?
Interesting.
Because they think that either I was lying and I'm going to come out, or that, and this is the bigger thought, gay is contagious.
Mm.
That it is airborne or saliva passed,
yeah.
Which is their big fear. What if they kiss me? I like it.
But you see, I think it's different with men and women. I don't mm-hmm. think there are many men who need to be coaxed into being gay. I mean, I think they know they're gay or not. Whereas someone like myself, I lived a, quote, straight life for many years. Mm-hmm. I met my partner, the first woman I ever met, and mm-hmm. then holy...
That was the first woman you ever met? You'd never met a woman before?
I never met any women before.
They're
no,
spectacular.
Being in comedy clubs,
right?
All
That's
men
true.
All the time.
That's true.
No, I, the first woman I had a relationship with, and here we are almost 13 years later.
That's great.
Yeah.
But, I would, you know, for the record, pure relationship, even though it's been on for 13 years, and a lot of straight relationships have lived and died in that time,
uh-huh.
it's still not legitimate. I'm just saying that the argument is there that just because you've been together 13 years and you're happily together and that you have, you know, a bonded relationship.
It doesn't count, right?
It does not
no,
count.
It doesn't.
It is not the same. I think it's wrong. And no. So, and that's the argument that you hear a lot.
It is. It is. But I feel that us gays, we have to get really serious now. I mean, really get angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we can't have a wedding, we won't cater a wedding.
There you go. Absolutely.
You want your hair and makeup? Go somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Won't be happening.
Let's see you fumble around glamour shots for a weekend trying to get your makeup done for
exactly.
free before you walk straight from the mall to your
uh-huh.
wedding.
Good luck with that Maybelline mascara wand on your own.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that,
see ya.
Those eyelash stickers where you stick your eyelash makeup on and then pull it off. And
that's
look,
right.
it's great. It's green. It looks great. the stunning thing to me, you know, more and more, especially you see when you see these pro gay marriage events and city halls, and you see these couples who've been together for 35, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
longer than my parents were together by a factor of three.
Yeah.
And I think there was nothing wrong with my parents' relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a good example of a straight relationship. They're together until they're done.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And that's true of gay people as well. But then you see these people who have been together for 35 years and you really want to say that they're not legitimate.
Mm-hmm,
this is not a
mm-hmm.
legitimate relationship.
And I think coming from the place that I did where I was married, you know, to a man and my marriage didn't work out, you know, once you've been part of the majority and you've never been discriminated against, once you're part of the minority and you are discriminated against very heavily,
yeah.
you feel it that much more because it's like I knew as a, you know, as a quote straight woman, I could, you know, go to Vegas, get drunk, and get married in 3 seconds to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
now that right has been taken away from you.
It has been taken away from me.
Oh.
I want to go to Vegas, get drunk, and get married.
Right, exactly. I've been to Vegas many, many times. I don't drink, and I'm not interested in getting married ever. And
Is that true? Ever? Really?
Yeah.
Why is that, Hal?
Because I don't think I need the state to tell me that I'm in love.
Mm.
And I think
right on.
I think a bonded relationship is the complete responsibility of the two people involved. I
mm-hmm.
think marriage had a specific point to me. a long time ago, and this is the part. By the way, most people don't know this, but in the King James Version of the Bible, the marriage ceremony that a lot of people use is based on a Greek same-sex marriage ceremony that men used to use about 1,000 years before.
You heard that on the Queer as Folk set, didn't you?
No, no, no. This was this was your HRC kind of a circumstance, but it was
really,
yeah. But it's true because back then women were property, and if you wanted a woman, her dad gave her to you in exchange for some property, so you didn't have to stand in front of the whole town and go, "I promise to love her forever." But two men who had fortunes, who had employees and slaves and land and food that they were going to grow, and once if they were going to join their group together, they had to stand in front of the whole town and go, "Look, we're not going to break up. This is a corporation we're basically forming." That's why you had to form, you know, two guys had to go, "Look, we're not going to. Obviously, we're not going to have kids together because that doesn't work yet. We don't know how to do that. We obviously don't know how bone marrow sperm is made yet." That's thousands of years, I hope. Right, Dave? You know, but that's, you know, that's what they needed, you know. And then the other purpose of marriage, of course, was inbreeding insurance. It was to keep track of who was sleeping with who.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, we were little tribes. We didn't know what inbreeding was. And eventually, three of the smartest guys in town, who became the church and then the government,
went. And that is the thing about inbreeding. It will present itself upon you.
It's an issue.
You don't have to seek it out.
So you got to start keeping track.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to continue to track. Like, look, if you want to sleep with somebody, no, knock yourself out, but come see us first so we can check off the list and go, okay, you're sleeping with them and these kids are yours? Okay, good. So we need to know who those kids are so that you can have them. Now, that was when there was less than 500,000 people on the earth. There are now 6.5 billion people on the earth, and the chances of that Filipino dude you met on the cruise last year being your first cousin are fairly slim. So I would say that the inbreeding is a much smaller danger.
Yeah.
You know, and the Europeans seem to agree with me.
Well, you see, I had no idea about that, about your personality, that you're not... Yeah. Were you to find someone, were you to find a woman that you love, you would not be interested in marrying. You've been spending a lot of time with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell.
That's true. It's true. Mostly Goldie. I love me a cougar. Especially one that I had a huge crush on and Seems Like Old Times.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just how I live. But I also think that everyone should have the right to live how they live. And I don't think that it were my marriage feelings based on some sort of religious belief that I wouldn't want the rest of the world not to get married because it makes me feel icky about how I want to live.
Yeah, well, that's what frustrates me the most about gay marriage. It's when people are like, "Oh, it threatens marriage." How would my getting married to my partner of 15 years threaten your marriage?
Right.
I mean, you know what? Guess what? If we got married tomorrow, the sun would come up, the sky would be blue. It's the same world, people.
Yeah.
It doesn't change.
They're afraid they're going to turn into a pillar of salt, or they'll have to admit that they're gay, come out of their marriage, and stop living a lie. That's the only way the gay marriage could ruin your heterosexual marriage is if you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only thing that would break you up.
Or,
if you're, you know.
Or they take the, you could marry your dog, or you could marry
a
lot of people, or,
that's
you know.
That's a total logical. Here's the funny thing. You can't marry more than one person in this country. Polygamy is outlawed. However,
except in Utah.
Yeah, except
your mileage may vary.
Right. Except if you, but you can live with all of them and have kids all you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's the stamp you can't get.
Right.
Which is the weird part, too. So they feel like the denial of the stamp is the denial of the existence.
Mm-hmm.
They pretend that there aren't these communes because the state hasn't said okay to these relationships in Utah and in Texas and in these weird compounds, that they don't exist. And they feel the same way about gay marriage, so they kind of lump them together. If there's no legal basis for it, then I can continue to pretend it's an anomaly that doesn't exist. And
exactly.
We got to take a break, and you can stick with me for another little bit.
But
yeah,
of course.
Please. I love
that. Yes.
I mean, I got you up this early. I mean, I should at least hang out.
Hey, I have a 3-year-old. I was up for hours
right,
already.
Exactly. So I'm Hal Sparks. I've got with me today the lovely and talented Carol Leifer. And our number is 1-800-STEP-12. I'm filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
What the hell was that?
Using the whole fist,
it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie while she's away on vacation. The show today is brought to you by the all-new Chevy Equinox, with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. How about that for an ad? You want to? I'm not even going to top it, though. Don't forget, Saturday, July 11th at 8 p.m., general admission $20, an evening with author and comedian Carol Leifer. All ticket holders will receive a free autographed copy of Carol's bestseller, When You Lie About Your Age, The Terrorists Win. Go to www.lagaycenter.org/boxoffice.
Yeah, come and see me.
Or call 323-860-7300.
Yeah, come on down, people.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a good time.
I'm surrounded by like-minded other people who want to...
Just because it's the Gay and Lesbian Center doesn't mean you got to be.
Don't. Yeah, absolutely. I've been to several of them in my life, and look, I'm still me.
That's right.
Again, I do think that's one of the angles that they push constantly, is that gay is contagious, and that's their big fear, is that if you allow it out of the box, it will just fly all over the place. Everyone will suddenly be gay, and it doesn't work like that.
And you know what I've noticed, too, that people that are anti-gay, against gay marriage, they don't have gay people in their lives.
Right.
They don't have gay family members, which most people do.
Yeah, they
know
do.
About, or gay friends. I mean, once you are up close and personal and live your life around gays and you see that we're just like everyone else, you become a more compassionate and empathetic person.
And that's why the attitude towards gays is certainly more open in cities than it is in big swaths of the country.
Yes.
You know, and this applies to black people and Hispanics and Jews. And usually when I get a call from somebody who don't like the black and don't like the Hispanic and don't like the Asian and don't like the gay and don't like the Jew, it's because they live pretty much a solitary life on a farm, fearing the other.
Yeah, they like corn.
Yes, exactly.
But they don't like everyone else.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, I live in a big city. I fear corn. I live in desperate fear of corn. High fructose
afraid.
Corn syrup, I believe, is coming for me in my sleep.
Get ye away from me, old cop!
Like,
get ye away!
Right. I just wake up and like, an ear! And, you know, like, not a human ear, an ear of corn. It's so frightening. No, I kid. I love crunchy sweet corn, and I'm not afraid of it. Don't sue me, corn farmers. we have to take another break because we're just that popular. And But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and DOMA and my belief about Obama having a plan. And I think he pushed some of his plan. I want to play some of the clips we had from the other day about Obama's big gay press conference.
Big gay press conference.
It was
Love
great.
Love it. It was fabulous.
It was fabulous. It was. It had ducks. It was awesome. We'll play
with
a little bit of that when we come
balloons.
Back. Yes. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number for the Stephanie Miller Show.
Have you got a plan, my lord?
Yes, I have, and it's so cunning you could brush your teeth with it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We have a bunch of calls. Carol Leifer is here with us today, and I want to take one. Matt is calling from
great.
L.A.
Super. Love
Matt
it.
Has a question for Carol. You there?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Matt.
I was wondering, Carol, I know I've seen you and stuff. I can't remember what it was that I realized you were a better actor than Jerry Seinfeld. And I'm just wondering why you weren't allowed to play yourself on that show instead of them creating a character.
That's an interesting question.
Well, you know,
thanks,
I wrote on Seinfeld.
Yes.
I contributed to about 75 episodes of the show, which was amazing. You know what? Once you're a writer on the show, it's hard to also do, you know, also be on the show. So I actually was on in an episode called The Kiss Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I played Wendy Malick's assistant when George
Wendy
goes
Malick.
To the chiropractor. And I'm the lady.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I was in some other, that's it. I was in other episodes, too, where they needed people at the last minute.
Right.
So.
It's a nice thing to be hanging around and kind of. have to do that. You know,
like, hey, we need Seinfeld, the best writing job ever I've had. I don't think I will ever find an equal job to that.
It just looked like a blast. It really did.
It was.
It was a joy. And speaking of a joy, if you want to experience a little bit of joy, you can go see Carol Leifer. It's an evening with author and comedian Carol Leifer at
the Renberg Theater.
The Renberg Theater, yes, in the Village at the Ed Gould Plaza. It's on McCadden Place in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood.
Yes, the LA Gay and Lesbian Center's Renberg Theater. LAGayCenter.org/boxoffice, Saturday, July 11th at 8 p.m.
What do you get with your $20 admission, Hal?
You get an autographed copy, by the way.
Right, autograph.
By When You Lie About Your Age, The Terrorists Win, her
My
book.
Best-selling book.
Look at that. You're so much better at the shilling. Like, I have in the first hour, I literally had a congressperson from Washington State, and I was just like, I'm playing in Bellevue, Washington. Sometime soon. I'm actually July 16th through the 18th. See,
oh,
I'm better
excellent.
That. I'm in Bellevue, Washington.
No, but this show is, you know, I came on in May to promote a benefit we did for the Amanda Foundation. Sold it out.
That's great.
So love the show.
Oh, absolutely. I should probably push more than that. So follow me at Hal Sparks on Twitter, and you'll see my dates as they come back, come up, and I'm coming to your town. I'm going to Lexington, Kentucky next week. I'll be at Comedy Off Broadway next week in Lexington,
Super.
Kentucky.
Lexington, Kentucky, yeah. Hotbed of comedy.
Apparently the big gay and lesbian town in Lexington, in Kentucky, actually, though.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. A lot of gay rednecks, actually. They just have to,
well,
you know, keep it on the deal.
Well, wherever there's moonshine, you'll find us gays.
Really? Is that what draws you? I would actually...
Alcohol, yes. We kind of gravitate towards... alcohol centers.
Well, I don't think that differs you from the straight community, from what I've judged. Being a non-drinker.
Well, I beg to differ. I invite you to the Abbey this weekend.
Sure.
And you might have a bit of a different
And I'll take
opinion.
You to the Key Club to see Steel Panther on a Monday night, and you tell me how
Steel
much...
Steel Panther
yeah,
is playing?
Absolutely. Steel Panther is every Monday night. They're an 80s metal cover band who are very funny.
Really?
Yes. They're good friends of mine, and they're brilliantly funny. They have a new album out, which is...
I hate 80s metal, I'm going to love an 80s metal cover band
absolutely.
Even more.
Well, because they're hilarious. I mean, and the truth is, it's kind of like Michael Jackson's music. Like, people are just responding, like, so positively to it, you know. And they're like, oh, I'm such a huge fan. Well, where were you when the guy was trying to sell records then? Because the last 15 years, he's had a hell of a time.
Yeah.
You know, but everybody, you know, his record album sales have shot up.
No, I know. Well,
now,
he's...
Do you realize the cause of his demise, though?
What's the latest now?
Rush Limbaugh has figured it out. Rush Limbaugh actually knows what happened. Okay, let's hear.
I feel a clip coming on.
Yeah, 8. Let me give you track 8. Yes. This is
he reached a level of success that may never be equaled. He flourished under Reagan. He languished under Clinton, Bush, and died under Obama.
I see. So it was the political, he was like the king of America,
yeah,
not just the king of pop.
Right.
So the like King Arthur, you know, as the land dies, so dieth the king.
Uh-huh.
You know, like
you know, that's a strange analogy because, you know, Zamfir, who played the pan flute,
mm-hmm,
he flourished under Reagan.
Absolutely.
And then yet died under Obama.
Huh.
What does that say?
Yeah. I think it's just basically Obama is bad for music.
Accordion music?
Yeah.
Same deal.
It, really?
Mm-hmm.
We've lost the greatest accordion player ever, and he was huge under Reagan, because Nancy loved, because you always have to have one during a seance, you always want, an accordion player,
yes,
in the background making kind of scary,
mm-hmm,
you know, Mario Puzo kind of.
And often get sitar music.
Oh, yeah.
Plummeted during Reagan, and yet flourishing during Obama.
Absolutely.
So what does that say about Ravi Shankar?
Absolutely. Right about the time they're talking about legalizing marijuana. Hello, Marijuana Policy Project people doing their homework, finally getting in there.
I love the latest, though, about Michael Jackson with... I think the custody, if his mother won't take the children, then he's asking Diana Ross. I love how he put that in the will without asking her.
Right, yeah. She doesn't even know. By the
knock,
way, you get
knock,
my kid.
Knock,
what?
Hello?
Yeah. Here's a man. You have, like, he has a huge catalog of unpublished music. He has a bunch of really cool stuff. And what does he give you in the will? You can have the kids.
You can have my children.
What?
You might want to think about a call before,
yeah,
Michael, when you leave your children to somewhere.
Right. Diana, I have something to say. I'm really busy right now, Michael. No, you'll really want to hear this before I've got rehearsals in 2 weeks.
Do you have three extra bedrooms?
I'm feeling a little weird right now, so you might want to know this. I'll call you back right after this. I'll call you later this afternoon. But Diana Ross would raise his children in the tradition of the Wiz that he, mm-hmm. would want them to be raised in, as Scarecrow, Tin Man, and the Cowardly Lion, I think. And she would play Dorothy, and then they would get a little dog, and they would all be happy.
He's on down my children.
Wow, okay. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. That's what he said. All right. Don't Ask, Don't Tell in DOMA. Now, I've been dealing with this, and I have been believing all along. And let's play the first clip of the Obama Big A press conference from the other day. Here it is.
We seek an America in which no one feels the pain of discrimination based on who you are or who you love. And I know that many in this room don't believe that progress has come fast enough. And I understand that. It's not for me to tell you to be patient, any more than it was for others to counsel patience to African Americans who were petitioning for equal rights a half century ago. But I say this, we have made progress, and we will make more. And I want you to know that I expect and hope to be judged not by words, not by promises I've made, but by the promises that my administration keeps. I suspect that by the time this administration is over, I think you guys will have pretty good feelings about the Obama administration.
See, there we go. So he promises the gay community a happy ending at the end, which I think is really... I love him for that.
That really was kind of like a public service announcement for mm-hmm. his administration. What's frustrating to me, though, is, the point of being president is that you put your policies in place. I mean, of course, he nominated a liberal judge for the Supreme Court because that's his philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's frustrating to me about it is, of course, in campaigning, he had to say, I'm against gay marriage, because he never would have won.
Right.
But you know he's for gay marriage.
Right.
Well, you're president now, so make it happen, dude.
Right. Well, one of the things is, and this is, this is the argument I've been making all along, is that he has a plan.
Well, have you got a plan, my lord?
Yes, I have, and it's so cunning you could brush your teeth with it.
His plan is that if he issues a signing statement, for example, in Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or in
mm-hmm,
DOMA,
mm-hmm.
the next president can do the exact same thing and push it right back to where it was. I mean, in the first 2 days he was in office, he undid a bunch of Bush's signing statements.
Yes.
And recognized probably in that moment how easily work can be
global
undone.
Global gag rule he did right
absolutely.
Away. Amazing for us pro-choice people.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just obviously allowed benefits for same-sex partners of federal employees and
mm-hmm.
ambassadors. Which
See?
Was,
now I wish I was a postal worker.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, because you'd probably come in here shooting up the place and say, I'm angry. but the point he's making, and he has been making all along, is that I'm going to defend DOMA and I'm going to defend Don't Ask, Don't Tell until the Congress changes it. And I'm going to push the Democrats to do it, but you also have to do it. You have to get after your congressperson and your senators. You have one congressperson to take care of, and you have two senators to contact.
Mm-hmm.
This is your job, I think, as a citizen in everything. We have to, we used to have to corral citizens. We don't. We now have to corral three politicians. And then you call the Capitol switchboard. You push from all angles. And he's willing to do it. I don't think there's any question that he's going to overturn overturn DOMA, and he's going to do, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's doing it with all the generals in line. He's the first guy to put forth a commission. That's getting everybody to go, do the review. Actually do the review, how it would affect the military, and then come back and show it to me. And when they come back and show it to him, he knows it's going to say it wouldn't affect a thing.
Well, here's the problem.
Yeah.
Here's a big problem.
Okay.
When you are, someone like myself who feels very passionately about making gay marriage a reality,
right.
And any talk show I go on, anything person I debate, and they can sit there and look you in the eye and go, well, our president is against gay marriage.
Right.
So, I'm sure you voted and love Obama, and he's against gay marriage. That really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
right.
He's in now. Let's make it a reality.
So let's play track two. This is why he made this big speech. This is on the 40th anniversary of Stonewall, by the way. He had this roundtable meeting with gay leaders, and then he had this thing. So let's play track two.
I've called on Congress to repeal the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. to help end discrimination. To help end discrimination against same-sex couples in this country. Now, I want to add, we have a duty to uphold existing law. But I believe we must do so in a way that does not exacerbate old divides. And fulfilling this duty in upholding the law in no way lessens my commitment to reversing this law. I've made that clear.
So what he's, this is the first time he's unequivocally said, I have addressed the Congress and I want it overturned, period.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress is where the law is made. The president executes it, and the Supreme Court can overturn it if it's unconstitutional. These are our three, you know, checks and balances, as it were. But for the first time since he's been in office, a very distinct, you know, direction towards I've directed, you know, I've called on Congress to appeal the so-called, even calls it the so-called Defense of Marriage
yes.
Act. You know, mocking the name, essentially, mm-hmm. which I think is a great move.
Well, look, I mean, look how far we've come. When he was already, you know, campaigning, to have a candidate at that time who even invoked the name of gays and,
right.
you know, equality, I mean, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like coming to your own, be who you really are,
right.
instead of, you don't have to kowtow anymore. You're in. Mm-hmm. Do what you need to do.
Right. Well, I, you know, and now he's got 60 votes. We got Al Franken.
That's right.
Which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I met Al several times. I'm sure you know Al.
I just got an email from him last night. I was so thrilled. I thought maybe as a senator now, I wouldn't even be hearing from him.
No. I can't wait to see his arguments from the floor.
Oh, it'll be amazing.
Oh, I mean, just, you know, as a comedy writer, most of us wish we could stand down on the floor and go, let me write a little bit of a speech and give,
he will be great. And he's the reason I got hired at Saturday Night Live, so I have
He's a genius, and if you haven't read his books, they're still valid.
Oh,
still
and on CD, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my
hilarious.
God. Hilarious.
Yeah, so I also want to address Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So here's track 4. This is the Don't Ask, Don't Tell quote.
I want to say a word about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. As I said before, I'll say it again. I believe Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't contribute to our national security. In fact, I believe preventing patriotic Americans from serving their country weakens our national security. My administration's already working with the Pentagon and members of the House and the Senate on how we'll go about ending this policy, which will require an act of Congress. Someday, I'm confident, we'll look back at this transition and ask why it generated such angst. But as Commander-in-Chief, in a time of war, I do have a responsibility to see that this change is administered in a practical way and a way that takes over the long term.
So,
but that's hedging still.
Well, no, his thing and Gibson, we'll talk about this. We have to take a break. We'll come back about this. And what they've been pushing is an enduring change because they want to make it so that you can't just turn it back on if he gets kicked out of office or if he leaves mm-hmm. at the end of 8 years or the Republicans take over at some point. He wants to make it a lasting point, which means not only the elimination of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but an affirmation law that I think is really what they have in the pipes that says not only do gay and lesbian people have the right to serve in the military, but it's a necessity because we need the people who care the most about this country, regardless of how they feel. So we'll come back and we'll talk. Believe me, I'm with you on the timing of it, but I think this is great movement in the right direction.
And we all love a good movement, don't we?
Yes, we do. This early, yeah. This is Hal Sparks. I'm lucky enough to have Carol Leifer in the studio with me. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. The Stephanie Miller Show.
It's absolutely perfection.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
Man, I'm tired of being right.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm, of course, filling in while Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation. Coming up at the Renberg Theater here in Los Angeles, at the Village at Ed Gould Plaza in Los Angeles, on McCadden Place, an evening with author and comedian K.
Carol Leifer. All ticket holders will receive a free autographed copy of Carol's bestseller, When You Lie About Your Age, The Terrorists Win. Saturday, July 11th at 8 p.m.
Calm down, people. We are going to have a party.
You can't just butt in while I'm doing my big voice version of it. I'm trying to do like an old-fashioned...
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to make it sound officially, almost like pre-recorded, but I failed miserably, but that doesn't mean I'm not trying. Nancy in Illinois wants to know, what's up with Prop 8? Nancy, you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Your question?
Well, for starters, I know you're not gay, but if you were, would you be a top or a bottom?
Oh, I would very drastically be a top.
Okay, good.
Yes, I can bring on any number of young ladies to contest to that fact.
They never ask gay women if you're a top or a bottom.
Sure they do.
They do?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I don't know how that works, you know. But anyway.
We only have about 5 minutes left in the hour. Otherwise, we'd go into it. I'll tell you what. I promise tomorrow to straighten all that out on the show.
Super. You know, I was really disappointed that Stephanie wasn't there this morning.
Thanks.
But after listening to your show, you guys are awesome.
Oh, right on.
Great job, you know. And just one quick comment. You know,
sure.
I never wanted to get married. Ever, ever, ever. So I lived with my husband for 15 years, and then it came down to insurance. So
yeah.
We got married 5 years ago because of insurance. And I felt like such a sellout, you know, like kowtowing to church and state.
Reason enough for us again to have a public health care option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people can get married. So people can get married because they want to get married, specifically because they want to get married. And if you want to protect the sanctity of marriage, how about only having it when people really, really want to do it instead of, well, we've been dating 3 years and I guess we should, and I don't know.
I don't understand what happened to that whole Proposition 8 thing. I think they worded it so incorrectly.
They did.
Yes.
You're right.
Because I know that we had a bill and I voted wrong because I didn't understand what the hell they were talking about. You
yeah.
know?
And
that's
here, part of the game.
A lot of people thought yes on 8 meant yes for gay marriage.
Right.
And yes was anti-gay marriage.
Right.
You're so correct.
Yeah, and believe me, that's part of the plan, Nancy. Excellent point. Carol, we only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
I want to make sure
that people
know that they can come see you at the Renberg Theater.
See me at the Renberg Theater
Hollywood,
Saturday, July 11th, 8 p.m.
That's true. And do you have a website?
I do.
Yeah.
It's conveniently carolleifer.com.
Oh, that's awesome.
CaroLLeifer.com.
See, that's fantastic because I have HalSparks.com. I got mine in like 1992, back when Al Gore invented the internet.
Oh.
By being the only guy at the table who knew even what it was. And going, you know, if we turned this loose on the public sector, they'd actually be able to use this, which was a great move as a conservative businessman. If a conservative businessman had said, we should turn the old Pentagon intranet system, which no one's using anymore because we have a new system, if we turned that loose on the private sector, this would be great for everybody. And if a conservative businessman had come up with that, they would be carrying him around on the shoulders and going, Reagan who? But since it was Al Gore, they're just mad at him because he wants to clean up the atmosphere so hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children aren't sent to the hospital every year with respiratory diseases and lung cancer and all these problems that come with it. Does anyone, do you even care? This is just insane to me.
My website has all of that info. And if you're listening, you're not in the L.A. area, please pick up my book,
You
Lie About Your Age, The Terrorists Win, a great, funny summer read.
I agree. And now I want to play the final clip from the Obama Big Ape press conference, number 6. It's this is really... this is the gayest moment of the whole thing.
The gayest?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't wait.
He's reaching his pinnacle. What's going to happen? And then, so one of the people in there does that. So
and that real transformative change never begins in Washington. Who's duck back there?
It's a duck.
There's a duck quacking in there somewhere. Where do you guys get these ringtones, by the way?
Right, so it's Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller. Thank you so much, Carol Leifer.
My pleasure.
1-800-STEP-12 is the number. Call in tomorrow, and we'll talk about any number of wonderful, important topics, including health care, including DOMA, including Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
If it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck,
it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah.